Hello, I'm Joel Hughes.
And I'm Aurora Alexander.
And this is the Psychology Pathways Podcast.
We help busy psychology students succeed.
Okay, that's enough of that. This is Dr. Hughes coming at you with a special edition of the podcast. And by way of disclaimer, I'm not a physician. I'm not a public health official. I'm a clinical health psychologist. Everything I say today is my opinion, and I'll be as accurate as I can be within the limits of my understanding. I'm also not a spokesperson for any university or department or anyone. In this episode, I will attempt to answer two questions. First, why is the novel coronavirus such a crisis? I'm hearing a lot of confusion on that point from people. Some people are very anxious, and some people do not appear to be taking it very seriously. And so let me just answer why I think the novel coronavirus is such a crisis. Second, how can we cope with the stress and anxiety during this difficult time? I know that right now our country has an unprecedented global health pandemic that we're facing, and I'm hearing a lot of fear in the community, and I'd like to talk about how to cope with stress and anxiety during this time. And you would have to email me to get more notes and the references and things like that, because there just won't be time to do detailed show notes. So spring 2020 is going to go down in history as a chaotic semester for most universities in this country. We're all practicing social distancing. All of our courses are now remote learning. You can't come to campus to work. In my state, all restaurants and bars are closed except for takeout orders. And surprise, today is not election day for the Democratic primary in Ohio. Every hour or more, I receive urgent emails from university administrators. Are you exhausted yet? Well, keep in mind that these things pass. I lived through the beginning and the middle of the AIDS and HIV pandemic when we didn't even know what it was. I remember the LA riots after the Rodney King verdict. I could smell the smoke from Los Angeles on my campus in Orange County. A couple of my friends panicked and drove to San Diego to rent a hotel for the night, which was probably overkill. I also remember the first night of the Gulf War when we all watched the shock and awe military operation in Baghdad. We watched it live on TV. I remember 9/11. I was working at Duke University Medical Center. I was on the phone with a patient who was awaiting a lung transplant, and my wife was in Atlanta. She had to drive a car to get back. I'm on the phone, and this guy says that I should probably go find a TV to watch. And I remember wandering through the hospital looking for a TV, and everyone was just standing there fixated on the monitor. And then I ended up going home. Everybody just called it a day. We went home. And we watched TV for 48 hours. Everyone was depressed. So by the end of April, we'll know a lot more about how long this will last. But life is going to be disrupted for the rest of the spring semester. But that's about it. So I'm here to tell you that this will pass. So let's start with, why is this such a crisis? Well, on December 31st, 2019, China reported a series of unexplained cases of pneumonia in the Wuhan province, and they were eventually understood to be a novel coronavirus, with a fatality rate somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 to 3%. On January 30th, the World Health Organization declared the novel coronavirus to be a public health emergency of international concern. Less than 2 weeks later, on February 11th, they named the disease COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. And then on March 13th, the World Health Organization declared the COVID-19 outbreak to be a global pandemic. Now, this is not the first time we've had an outbreak of a deadly coronavirus in the 21st century. The severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus, SARS-CoV, of 2002 to 2003, we also had the H1N1 pandemic or swine flu during 2009 to 2010, and the Middle East respiratory syndrome coronavirus in about 2015. All of these previous coronavirus outbreaks will inform our public health efforts. However, the COVID-19 pandemic is novel, and it presents new challenges. This is a threat to global public health that has a mortality rate that exceeds that of the seasonal flu epidemic by somewhere between 4 to 10, maybe more, And the novelty elicits increased anxiety and stress because of the uncertainty associated with a previously unknown pathogen. And as best I can understand, the danger of this coronavirus is due to the combination of four factors. First, the novel coronavirus is highly contagious. It can spread from person to person, from coughing, sneezing, things that people touch, and otherwise. And people are contagious when they don't have any symptoms and when the symptoms are not that severe yet. So we don't know how far it has spread. Second, it can cause severe acute respiratory distress syndrome, or SARS. This means that shortness of breath can result, including respiratory failure, due to complications like pneumonia. However, the SARS caused by this new coronavirus has a risk of death that is, you know, like I said, maybe 10 times the rate of regular seasonal influenza or the flu. Third, there's no vaccine, there's no medicine for this novel coronavirus. I mean, we're all familiar with the seasonal influenza, which during the 2017 to 2018 flu season infected about 45 million Americans, and it killed about 60,000. I had my flu shot this year. Did you? Well, there's no flu shot for the novel coronavirus, and there's no medicine that we can use to treat it. And this leads to the fourth implication. Fourth, if someone does get infected with the novel coronavirus and ends up getting SARS or severe acute respiratory syndrome, the only treatment is assisted respiration until your body fights off the illness. In other words, people are put on a ventilator. However, there are a limited number of ventilators in your community and in the United States. So previous coronaviruses did not have this combination of being highly contagious, causing SARS, having no vaccine or medicine, and requiring ventilators of which there is a limited supply. So when you put these four things together, that's why this public health concern is so dangerous and such a concern to the officials who are responsible for protecting the health of our communities. So despite the fact that the majority of people who become infected will only have very mild symptoms, everyone is very concerned. And to understand this, let's think backwards from the number of ventilators available. So imagine that you live in a city with a population of 1 million people. Imagine that the local hospital has 1,000 ventilators, and I'm just making up numbers, but let's say there's 1,000 ventilators. Let's imagine that 200,000 people in your city become infected with the coronavirus and 2,000 people need to be put on a ventilator. If there's only 1,000 ventilators available, then 1,000 people will die. And that's a mortality rate of 0.5%. On the other hand, if 500,000 people contract the coronavirus instead of 200,000, and 5,000 people need to be put on a ventilator, then 4,000 people in that city die. And that's a mortality rate of 0.8%. This is why the death rate ranges from less than 0.7% in South Korea to about 6% in Italy. It depends both on how many people get infected at the same time, how many people need to be put on a ventilator because their symptoms get very severe, and how many ventilators there are. America has about 160,000 ventilators, according to a recent study. So if 160 million people become infected with the novel coronavirus at the same time, that is not enough. Now you can understand why everyone is practicing social distancing. We, as a society, are trying to prevent the rapid spread of this new coronavirus. So how many people will die? Well, according to an expert panel at the University of California at San Francisco that met on March 10th, roughly 1.5 million people could die in the next 18 months if nothing is done. The novel coronavirus, or COVID-19, has the potential to kill approximately 1.5 million people in America, plus or minus a few hundred thousand. But it won't. If the current social distancing measures work, we can limit the deaths to a fraction of that. And let's put those numbers in perspective. Imagine that we did nothing and 1.5 million people die in the United States. Well, last year, about 2.8 million people died of all causes in America, which includes all the top causes of death, such as heart disease, killed about 650,000, cancer, killed about 600,000, accidents killed about 170,000, and chronic lower respiratory diseases killed about 160,000. So the novel coronavirus has the potential to kill more people this year than heart disease, cancer, and lung disease combined. Or think about it this way. During World War II, there were about 400,000 Americans who died. So the novel coronavirus has the potential to kill three times as many Americans as died in World War II. It has the potential to kill as many Americans as died in all of the wars that America has fought, including the Civil War, World War I, World War II, Vietnam, Korea, etc. Yes, the people who die will mostly be older. They'll have underlying health conditions, or they'll be healthcare providers and first responders. Healthcare providers and first responders are always more susceptible to coronaviruses than the rest of the population for reasons that aren't entirely clear. It may have something to do with the fact that they are in close proximity to patients and that they may receive high doses of the virus. Still, these are our grandparents, parents, friends. These are our nurses and physicians. These are our firefighters and police officers and so on. This is my mom. My mom is in the age range where she would have maybe a 15% chance of dying if she catches this disease. So that's a lot of people. But as I predicted, I don't think that the novel coronavirus will kill 1.5 million Americans this year. That's because public health efforts are going to balance providing accurate information to the public in an attempt to stop the spread of the virus against the risk of economic and social turmoil. And right now, they've chosen to slow the spread of the disease, even though, as we're already experiencing, the social and economic consequences will be severe. Now, one of these consequences that the media is not talking about as much is the increased stress and anxiety that people will face. There are some recent polls showing that COVID-19 has caused widespread perception of threat and anxiety about the risk of infection. And although there are no data, the stress associated with this pandemic could increase mental health problems such as depression and anxiety and loneliness. And the consequences of these could exceed the consequences of the virus for people who don't become ill or who do not become severely ill. So how can we cope? My second question, how can we cope with stress and anxiety during this difficult time? Well, psychology experts in the media have kind of a grab bag of ideas for coping with anxiety during the novel coronavirus pandemic, and here's mine. My approach is loosely based on psychological principles, and it forms the acronym CARES, C-A-R-E-S. These stand for commit, accept, relax, exercise, and schedule. Feel free to use it widely. If you email me, I'll send you a copy in Microsoft Word that you can edit. So let's start with commit. Commit to living a life consistent with your most deeply held values, regardless of how you feel in the moment. What is truly important to you? Is it family? Relationships? Health? Perhaps your education or your vocation? Helping others? Whatever your values, commit to living a principled life that's based on your values. Resist being reactive and just living a shallow, frantic life. During this time, you can find ways to enact your values in your daily life if you are creative. And I know that the listeners of this podcast are very creative, and you can find a way to further your education, your vocation, your relationships, your health during this time. Accept. Accept that some fear and anxiety is normal and appropriate. Pandemics are scary. Why wouldn't you have some fear? However, you should not deny or push away your fear or your sadness or your disappointment or your frustration. Don't avoid it. Just let it happen. The problem starts when we refuse to feel our emotions. This pushes fear into shallow thinking, a style of anxiety that avoids feelings, and then we find ourselves avoiding feelings, situations, and behaviors. Because when you think about it, emotions such as fear have information value, and they're very motivating. If you're watching TV and a tiger wanders inside, you would be very afraid, and the fear motivates you to run away. But genuine emotions are like the weather. They come and they go fairly quickly, even when they're very strong. So let it happen. Accept that you will have some strong feelings. Relax. Learn stress management. Now you have the time to learn a stress management technique if you don't already know one. And there are many approaches. Progressive muscle relaxation, we hand it out like aspirin in clinical health psychology. Find a guided imagery script or recording. Mindfulness-based stress reduction and others. There's lots of instructions online, and there's many smartphone apps for meditation and guided imagery and other forms of stress management. So choose an approach that fits you and take the time to relax. Reducing your overall level of arousal is like stealing the oxygen from the anxiety fire. Starve it. You experience less stress, less tension, less worry when you are relaxed. Sometimes distracting yourself from your worries by being fully engaged with something positive, like stress management or exercise, which I'm going to get to in a minute, is a good idea. One simple example is the popular 5-4-3-2-1 coping technique for grounding yourself or dealing with anxiety. So if you find yourself unable to stop that hamster wheel in your head and your worries just can't go away, do this. Take a deep, slow breath. 5. What are 5 things you can see? I see the computer screen. I see a clock. I see a window. I see trees outside. They don't have leaves yet. Direct your vision to 5 things in your surroundings. What are 4 things you can touch? The chair you're sitting on. The table in front of you. Reach down and feel your shoelaces. Feel the hand sanitizers cooling your skin. Acknowledge any 4 things that engage your sense of touch. What are 3 things you can hear? Listen carefully. Can you hear the clock ticking? Can you hear any birds singing? Even the soft whirring of your computer fan. Just take a moment to hear all the noises that you typically filter out. What are 2 things you can smell? Can you smell the mint in your tea? Perhaps you can go smell the fancy soaps or hair products you have in the bathroom. Smell is a powerful sense for commanding your full attention to the present moment. 1. What is 1 thing you can taste? Does the inside of your mouth still taste like toothpaste or coffee or tea? If you have some coffee or tea handy, take a sip. Try to detect the subtle flavor notes. Fully engaging your 5 senses directs your attention to the present moment and away from stressful thoughts. Here's another one. Exercise. Going outside for a walk or a run is a great way to get some fresh air, which is safe and healthy. It's fine to go outside and wander around, so long as you're not congregating in herds on someone's lawn. More broadly, exercise reminds us that no matter what is going on in the world, self-care, such as nutrition, sleep, physical activity, fitness, are important for maintaining our physical and our mental health. The CDC recommends getting good sleep and eating healthy foods during the pandemic to keep your immune system strong. Exercise is powerful medicine for depression, anxiety, and many other problems. Exercise burns off the stress hormones. One reason that zebras don't get ulcers is because they run when they're scared. Schedule. Set a schedule and stick to it. Schedule times for work, times for school, times for chores and exercise and sleep and everything else that you need to do. Schedules promote healthy habits. Get up at the same time every day, get dressed even if you don't have anywhere to go, don't stay in your pajamas all day, don't work on your bed, eat at set times, don't just snack all day, don't watch the news media all day, and don't think about the pandemic all day. Maintaining a regular schedule also provides a reassuring routine that leaves less time for worry. In fact, if you are worried and anxious, schedule your worry for a specific part of the day. I know it sounds impossible, but people who struggle with worry are often asked to schedule their worry so that it doesn't take over the day. So allow yourself a specific time each day to do all your worrying. Maybe you choose the evening news. Maybe you turn on the evening news and you worry throughout the entire news and you search the internet and you watch the news. And when you're not during your scheduled worry time, if your mind wanders to worries, remind yourself that you already have scheduled time for worrying. Once a day is plenty of time to do your worrying. You could even keep a small journal handy and write down the topics that you'd like to cover during your worry time. It sounds hard, but you can control your attention by directing your attention to where you want to focus. And you simply can't focus on everything at once. So use your ability to control your attention to focus on positive, productive activities and compress your worry time into an hour or less each day. So just to review my CARES coping plan during the COVID-19 pandemic stands for commit, accept, relax, exercise, and schedule. And that's a great way to cope with the stress of what's going on. Meanwhile, what can you do? Well, as of the time of this recording, on March 17th, things are still uncertain, but you can do your part. On March 16th, the White House put out the President's Coronavirus Guidelines for America, and at the top it says 15 days to slow the spread. It says listen to and follow the directions of your state and local authorities. If you feel sick, stay home. Don't go to work. Contact your medical provider. If your children are sick, keep them at home. Do not send them to school. Contact your medical provider. If someone in your household has tested positive for the coronavirus, keep the entire household at home. Do not go to work. Do not go to school. Contact your medical provider. If you are an older person, stay home and away from other people. If you are a person with a serious underlying health condition that can put you at increased risk, for example, a condition that impairs your lung or heart function or weakens your immune system, stay home and away from other people. In my community, cardiac and pulmonary rehabilitation ceased operations yesterday. And so it'll be a while until the people at cardiac and pulmonary rehabilitation come back to exercise. So the President's Coronavirus Guidelines for America continue. Do your part to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Even if you're young or otherwise healthy, such as most of the people listening to this podcast, you are at risk and your activities can increase the risk for others. It's critical that you do your part to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Suggestions are to work or do your school from home whenever possible. If you work in a critical infrastructure industry defined by the Department of Homeland Security, such as healthcare services or food supply, then you have a special responsibility to maintain your normal work schedule. But just follow the CDC guidance. Avoid social gatherings in large groups of more than 10 people. Avoid eating or drinking at bars, restaurants, food courts. Use drive-through, pickup, or delivery. In my state, in Ohio, all of the bars and restaurants are already closed. Avoid discretionary travel, shopping trips, social visits, and do not visit nursing homes or retirement or long-term care facilities unless you're there employed to provide assistance. Finally, practice good hygiene, which is true for every flu season. Wash your hands, especially after touching any frequently used item or surface. Avoid touching your face. Sneeze or cough into a tissue or the inside of your elbow. And disinfect frequently used items and surfaces as much as possible. So I can't really answer very specific questions in a podcast format. This is not the right venue for that. But I will offer you this. This too shall pass. This is at least the third deadly coronavirus outbreak during the 21st century, depending on how you define outbreak. If you're in a younger generation, as most listeners to this podcast will be, this is your opportunity. This is your moment to come together and serve the public good. I already mentioned that this coronavirus has the potential to kill more Americans than World War II, two or three times as many. But it won't. But this is your war. When World War II suddenly involved America after the attack on Pearl Harbor, our society rallied around the cause and we won the war. And you know what that generation was called? At least by Tom Brokaw? It was called the Greatest Generation. So I think that what you'll find during this highly stressful time is that your university is very resilient. Administrators and faculty and staff will do whatever it takes to keep you graduating on time, to make your courses available, to make up for whatever is missed. I think you'll find that in the spring of 2020, everyone will forgive you for being derailed a little bit from your professional development plans, from acquiring the experiences that you needed for your CV or resume. I mean, around here, virtually all research has come to a complete standstill, although you could use this time to write. But you'll find that people are extremely resilient. We'll find that people come together during a crisis like this to defeat the pandemic. And if we all work together, we'll find that by the summer, the crisis has passed and a new normal will start. And ironically, we will have benefited in some way from putting the interests of our older generations in our country and our world above those of our own. So hang in there. Email me if you have any questions.
Thank you for joining us for the Psychology Pathways podcast. Remember, we're not acting as an official spokesperson for anyone, and this podcast is not endorsed by any department or university. The views expressed here are ours alone. This podcast is the private social media property of Joel Hughes and Aurora Alexander, and is not a social media platform representing any department or university. We hope you'll join us for the next episode.
If you enjoyed the show, rate us at iTunes or Spotify and tell your friends.
Find out more at psychpathways.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H pathways.com.
And send your listener questions to psychologypathwayspodcast@gmail.com.